This is about the voices in your head, and quite frankly, they're not yours. And yet, we take so much notice of them. So, anybody who's seen me before, I just need a brief explanation of how the mind works, so that you understand, because everything I do is based on this understanding of how the mind works. So, we have two aspects of the mind. We have the conscious part of the mind, and we have the bit I call the unconscious. Some people call it the subconscious, and some people get very excited when you don't call it the subconscious. But I call it the unconscious because there's awareness and unawareness. It's as simple as that. And I don't care which bit of the brain it is, so I don't mix my talk-ups with these technicalities of, you know, that's the amygdala and that's this. And it doesn't matter where it comes from, okay? So it's not that you've got two bits, one's the unconscious, one's the conscious, it's you've got lots of bits and they all do different bits. But in the main, we're only aware of the conscious bits. Okay? But your conscious mind only holds 8 bits of data. And to put it in a technical term, if I told you my phone number now, a digit at a time, come on, that would fill your head up. Right? So if I go 0, 1, 5, 2, 6, 8, 3, 2, 5, 6, 3, you have to remember that now, and then I carry on talking, you won't remember it. Or you'll remember it, but you won't hear the rest of the things I say, because that's filled your head up. This is why we do things like 0, 1, 5, 2, 6, 8, 3, 2, 5, 6, 3. 3 digits! Okay? So this is how we play around with the brain and get to use it. But most of the thoughts we have are not really good ones, you know, and that's what we're here about today, because I've never yet had somebody say, oh, I have these fantastic thoughts every day, I'm so happy, stop it for me, please, right? Nobody ever does that, right? So I always get I never hear from people what they want, I always hear what they want to get rid of. So I'll say, what do you want? And they'll say, I want to get rid of anxiety. And I go, yes, and what would you want in its place? Just to get rid of anxiety, please. So I have to guess what they want. And quite typically now, if nobody knows what they want, I fill them up with love, joy and peace. Because we all want that. And if you think about, you know, oh, things will be so much better when I've got this, when I've done that, just think about what you're truly after. And if you keep saying to people, well, you know, so when you've got your first 5 million, what will you want? Well, then I want two houses and 4 swimming pools and 5 Porsches. And what do you want? And then what you're really asking is, well, what do you want to be? And they go, oh, I want to be happy. Well, you can be happy without all that. Because we've just got happiness inside us and it just needs to come out. But the problem we have is that we fill ourselves full of programs that tell us how to behave, what to do, what not to do, how other people might think about us doing certain things. So most of the things we do, we don't just go, I would like to do this. We go, I'd like to do that, but what will they think? And if I'm doing that, I can't help them, and they'll want me to help them. And we get all this stuff going on in our head. And life is much more simple than that. It is for me, anyway. So this is why I'm sharing the sorts of things I've learnt over helping people for the last 5 years now. I've helped hundreds of people escape from anxiety because it simply is a program. A program that happens when sometimes, usually in early childhood, because anything happens as an adult, we can rationalise it. This happened to me, or I got mugged in a car park. Was dark at night, was a rough area, you know, should have known better, I don't know what I was doing there. We could rationalise it. But if something happens as a child and it frightens or terrifies you, you actually fill yourself up with a chemical at that moment that overtakes you and you freeze up and it's horrible and you don't know what it is. And you can't say, oh, this is fear, I've never felt fear before. You just go, what the hell's this? I've been overtaken by a monster. Right? And the brain has to make a program to protect you from it. So in that split second, your brain goes, I need a program now, and it goes, right, I don't want to feel like this again, how do I avoid it in the future? And it gives you a thing called hypervigilance. And hypervigilance is just this thing that goes, I know something bad's about to happen, but I'm going to spot it this time early. And if I spot it early, I can run away, or I can fight it, or I can do something. I can hide or whatever. And you're ever, forever in that mode. You just keep looking around all the time for this thing that's going to go bad. And you don't know what's going to go wrong, but you have this feeling that something out there is going to happen that's bad. And if you have that feeling, what you look for, you actually see and you notice. Come on in, take a seat. You actually notice the thing you're looking for. You know, if you're looking for something, you don't see other things. I've quite often gone downstairs and looked for a purple angle screwdriver. I've looked through all my tools to find this purple angle screwdriver. I can't find it, and then I realise it's got a red handle. And then as soon as I realise it's got a red handle, I find it straight away. Because I would have rooted through it, because I'm not looking for a red handle screwdriver, I'm looking for a purple one. And this is what we do. If you're always looking for what's going to go wrong, you will find plenty of things that go wrong. And you won't find that many things that go right, because you're not looking for them. So, I'm going to destroy a myth you all have here. Has everybody heard of this myth that bad things come in threes?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Okay. Right, I'm going to destroy that for you. I hope you all like this. Okay. So, it cannot be true that bad things come in threes, and I'll explain why. We have something bad happen to us, and we go, oh my God, this bad thing happened. And not only that, there's another two coming, right? So we feel bad enough about the things happening, but we know there's two more coming.
I've gone on to go on to another three after to make six.
Just a minute, I'm coming to that. So you have this one, you're now waiting for the second one, and because you're waiting for the second one, you're looking out for anything that goes wrong. And quite frankly, we have lots of things go wrong in a day. So you look for something that's significant enough to be called the second bad thing. Right? And eventually the second bad thing happens. And then you go, oh God, there's a third one coming. Now, you almost wish this third one would hurry up and come. Because it's waiting for, you're waiting for this bloody thing to happen. And you're going, oh God, when's the third one coming? So you spend all this time anxious waiting for this third one to happen. And then the third one happens, there's almost relief. It's like, oh, thank God for that, that's the third one. Now, if it was a proper rule, it would mean then there'd have to be a time span before it can happen again. Because if it happens again and half an hour later, you'd start again with, oh, there's one again. You wouldn't go, here's number four. Because that wouldn't fit your belief system that bad things happen in threes. So you'd have to go, well, I've got the three now. Oh, shit, I've started with another three. And you start off, and then you, like you said, I've had three sets of threes or whatever. You end up then in these threes and threes and threes.
Just close the door for a treatment.
Okay. Now, that's not about us hearing their noise, that's my noise going out. So, just imagine then that you've been told, what you've been told is not true. Simply not true. Right? They don't come in threes, they come when they come, and you have no control over. The only thing you do with bad things is deal with them in the best possible way you can, because they will happen. However good a life you have, you'll have bad things happen in it. It's just how it goes. Sometimes we have lots of bad things happen in a short period of time, sometimes we get a long period of time, but it's just the randomness of something happening you have no control over. Just accept that, that's how it is. The best we can do is just deal with it well, okay? But you won't deal with it well if you've got an overall anxiety, because you'll have seen it coming and you'll have, oh my God, I knew something bad was going to happen. Now, so I'm going to tell you the opposite, which is that good things do come in threes, okay? And I can prove this, okay? So something good happens and you go, oh, something really good's happening, I feel really good. And then you go, and I've got two more to come. Now, isn't that better? And then you look forward to the second one, so you spot it early, so you actually recognise this good thing that's happening, because you're looking for good things, and the second thing happens. And then you go, and there's another one due. And then you look for that, and you get another one. But because you're now looking for good things, a fourth one comes along. So you can go, oh, another set of three. And you can live your life looking for the good stuff. And you might think that's crazy and too simple, but you've done it the other way around, and it's not nice. And you didn't stop doing it. So why wouldn't you do it the good way around? So I want you all to think now, whenever you see something good happening, go, there's another two, just need to wait for them. And they'll turn up. And it's amazing, once you've got that viewpoint, you start seeing good stuff and you see it turn up. I have so many happy coincidences in my life, of things that are billion to one chances that keep happening. And they happen virtually every day, and I got so used to them, I get lost in examples. But typically, somebody will turn up with a particular issue to do with anxiety, and quite often, come on in, the day before I've read something that is so specific and helps that particular person, and I think, well, if I hadn't read that, I don't know what I would have done with them. But it's never 2 days before or three, it's always the day before. It just, and it's because it's fresh in my memory, and I go, I read something about that yesterday. And you ask anybody that's ever been to me and say, did he read something the day before? And they'll go, well, I actually did. Yeah, because it just happens, because I'm looking for good stuff in my life as I find it. I've stopped looking for bad stuff. I'm 63 now, I've had enough bad stuff to last me a lifetime. Okay. And strangely, when I give thanks for things, I actually say, and thank you for all the bad stuff in my life. Because it's given me all this experience to help other people and the ability to do so. And that sort of knowledge of what's happening in their life and how bad it is. But I follow that up with, but don't give me any more, I've got enough anecdotes, thank you. Okay. So it's all about this thing about how life is not what you think it is, it's how you perceive it is. Because your perception of there being three bad things in a row is no different to the perception of three good things in a row. It's just another rule that you've got in your head. So we quite often have thoughts in our head. And if you're going, well, I don't have a voice in my head, that's the voice. Okay? So I read something once of a woman who does massive talks to hundreds of people. And she's got a split personality disorder. And she kept going to psychiatrists and things, going, you know, I've got this voice in my head. And they all said, oh, I can't deal with that. And they passed her on, passed her on, passed her on. Until she met a psychologist once who changed her life. And all he said was, we all have voices in our head. It didn't cure her, but it made her suddenly feel normal. Because she kept talking about voices in her head. And everybody was going, oh, that's horrible. But we all have voices in our head. And we think it's us because it sounds like us. But it's not. It's you repeating something that you've heard in the past. It's one of these rules or regulations that you've got. So when we're born with a set of survival skills. We're also born to parents. And the job of the parent is to keep you safe until you can flee the nest. Right? And that's what it's all about. So you're born with a certain amount of skills. You then start learning skills by observing everybody around you. Particularly in the first 5 years, you just watch everything. And you go, oh, I'd like to do a bit of that walking and talking stuff. And you keep practicing it until you can do it. But you also observe your parents' relationship, your siblings, everybody else around you, how they treat you, how much love there is about or not. If you're fortunate, you grow up in a wonderful household with lots of love and you believe that's how life is. And if you're not fortunate and you're brought up in somewhere where you're not shown any love, you believe that's how life is. Because you don't know any different. At about 6, we start getting a bit more discriminative. This is when we can say, well, I watched my father as a drunkard or my mother as a drunkard, and that's not for me. I will never drink in my life. Or we could watch Mother as a Drunkard and assume that that's how we're going to be. And become a drunkard. Right? In later life. Or even very early on. Start drinking really early because that's what you think how we deal with life. So we have all these rules and regulations. So if I give you one that we probably all have, is clear your plate. Anybody not had that as a rule or regulation? Clear your plate. Now, I would hardly eat anything when I was a kid. When I was 16, I was about 6 stone went through. And I had lots of muscles, but I had no framework at all because I wouldn't eat anything. And my mother used to have to try and get to me to eat. So anything that went on the plate, I had to eat. And I had to clear it up because it was like, well, you've got food in front of you and we keep wasting it, so you've got to eat it. So I would then request hardly anything on the plate so I didn't have to eat much. And if anything new was put on the plate, I didn't want to try it. Because if I tried it and didn't like it, I'd still bloody get it. So I wouldn't try new things. So you can see that was programming me to say, it's not good to try new things, because if you try new things, then you're forced into it. Right? So I wouldn't try anything new. And it took somebody when I was 16, I worked with a big, tall guy, big, friendly giant. He was a lovely guy. Great sense of humour. And he said one day, we're going to go for a Chinese. And I went, oh, I don't like a Chinese. And he went, you're coming. And he took me for a Chinese, and it was like a long time ago, because I'm 63 now. But we went there, and it was like this clear soup. Well, that was fairly innocuous. And then there was sweet and sour pork balls, but in a batter, but with this sweet and sour sauce. And it was like, oh, with chips, of course, no rice. And finished off with this batter with a banana or something in it, with treacle syrup on it. So I was like, I like Chinese. Well, that's nothing like any of you knows of Chinese, is it? But I'm like, I like Chinese. And suddenly I was able to start experimenting with food and then eat and so on. And that's how I stopped being 6'10". But we have these programs and they hold us back in life. So that voice in your head, whatever it says, you know, you'll never amount to anything, something like that, or don't be a big head, or you'll never get your head through the door. Things that you can understand that I was told as a kid. But when I was a kid, I seemed to have a head that seemed, that the actual cranium seemed to go like that. And I was aware of this. So when I was told not to be a big head, it was like, oh shit, I already am. So it really hurt me, because it was like, don't be a big head. Well, I can't do anything about this. I've got this big lump on the back of my head. But we get told all sorts of stuff. We get put down about things. We get told we're not worthy or so on. There's something I want you to do now. I want you to go inside your own head, and I want you to assess your value of yourself as a person, your self-worth, okay? I want you to do this out of 10. Right? So 0 being, I don't value myself at all, and 10 being, yeah, I'm me. I'm okay, I'm absolutely fine. We're not talking about perfection here. This is not you thinking you're perfect if you give yourself a 10. You just like you. You're all right. You're okay as a person. And you're over, you know, you're doing your bit in the world, if you like. Okay? So, give yourself a number. You're not going to tell me it, so that's fine. So, just be... In fact, the first number that comes into your mind is possibly the most correct one. So, give yourself that number. Okay? Now, quite often when people come and visit me, it's a 2. It starts off as a 2. 2 out of 10 they'll give themselves. Now, just understand this is your own assessment of you. This is not what anybody else thinks, anybody else's belief system or anything. This is you assessing you. It's not saying you're perfect or beautiful or the right weight or anything. It's just saying how I assess myself. So on that basis, you have put a value on your life that you now live. And if it's 2 out of 10, you're living your life at 20% of what your life could be. If it's 4, you're living your life at 40% of what it could be. If it's 8, you're living your life at 80% of what it could be. Just because you don't give yourself a higher score. Isn't that funny? Okay, now, we'll come back to this in a few minutes. So where do we get self-worth from? Well, although I've just said, this is your value of you, You must have got self-worth or not got any self-worth in the first place. And we get that from other people. So when we're young and we go, look at me, I'm doing this, oh, aren't I clever? And somebody goes, that's brilliant, oh yes, that's marvellous, yeah, wonderful, are you lovely? We go up a bit and we go, yes, that person who should love me values me. And if we do, we get the opposite, we do, oh, look at me, look at me, look at me, and nobody looks, we go, nobody's bothered about me, nobody cares. That means I have little value. And the problem is, you set in stone whatever your belief is. As soon as you have a belief that says, I'm wonderful, I'm lovely, you can carry that throughout your life. But if you have a belief that says, people don't care for me or love me, you have then set this benchmark of your belief. And the thing is that anything else that comes in, you match it against your self-belief. So if somebody says later on in life, I think you're lovely, I want to go out with you, and you go, what's wrong with them? That person couldn't possibly love me. I don't even like me. Right? How could somebody else love me? And if you do let them in, just out of curiosity, and you don't frighten them off, you keep testing them. Because how could they like you? They can't really like you, so let me test you. And then we push them away a bit, and we say horrible things, and we do things, and we keep pushing people away. And then eventually, they'll run off screaming, going, yes, yes, you're right. Nobody could love you. And then we go, I knew I was right. And there's some sort of, oh yeah, I might not be lovable, but at least I'm right. Okay? And we're back to this noticing thing again. You only notice things that fit your belief system. And everything outside your belief system you throw away. Or you push away until you prove, actually, that it fits your belief system. Because they're not there anymore. What a crazy way to live a life. The great thing is, once you recognise you're doing this, you can do something about it. But until then, you run by this program in your head that goes, oh, you know, nobody could love me, nobody could love me. Okay? Now, I've done this quite a few times. So I want you to think, based on that knowledge, that you have set this number in your head now, right? And that you now know it only takes you, nobody else, to increase that number. I want you to try a higher number on. Right? So take that number you started with, and if you're at 10, brilliant. Okay? That's not big-headed, that's not sort of saying you're perfect, that is brilliant. That is where I want you all. And if you can go to 10 now, I want you to go to 10 now and try on 10. Right? If you feel that you can't go to 10 in this instant, I want you to go to the highest number that you think you can go to today. Okay? So pick a number now. Right. See if you can get a nice leap from where you were, a few points up their scale, and choose that number. Okay? And start to live your life at that number. Because there's nothing stopping you doing that now. Right? You put that number on it now. That's it. You've changed your life to that number. And you're going to say, well, it can't be as simple as that. It is, because it's your number. And you're in charge of them. And if you're giving yourself a number less than 10, I want you to think about how you can get to 10. Why haven't you given yourself a 10? Right? And then you can come up with all sorts of things. Well, I'm not perfect. And when people say I'm not perfect, I go, look at these teeth. I'm a 10, look at these teeth. Okay? It doesn't matter. You are you. You are absolutely unique on this planet. You have a head full of stuff that only you know. And some people know bits of it, and some people know other bits, but only you know everything that you know. Right? And you took on so many lessons in your life, and some of them you've learned the wrong answer. Okay? If you're in pain now, either physical or in torture of something that happened in the past, just understand now you can lose that in an instant the same. Because it's not here in this room now, it doesn't exist. Because we only ever have now, this instant that you're here. And you're all here for a reason. There's something that got you here today and brought you here and got you to understand that you can change your life just by changing your thoughts. And I know there'll be a lot of you saying, well, it's not that easy, and I've tried. So I'm going to show you some things that will help you change your thoughts. Okay. But it is that simple. But these things run in your unconscious, not in your conscious mind. So with some things, we know the right thing to do and the right thing that will work out. I used to help people with weight loss. And everybody would come to me, know what to eat, know what not to eat, know they should be drinking water, know they shouldn't be drinking Coca-Cola. They all know that at a conscious level. But the unconscious is going, oh, there's a different program here. You need to keep eating. You need to empty your plate. You need to do that. You need to do that. One of the biggest things I found with people who consistently couldn't lose weight was lack of self-worth. Because if you put on weight, you lose your features and your face and everything. You become more like lots of other people. Right? And if you do it really to extreme, if you get somebody who's about 30 stone, you'd struggle to tell the difference between two 30 stone people because there's not much of anything there anymore that distinguishes them. And sometimes what's happened is, particularly, I mainly dealt with women, they would have something that happened to them that male attention that was not required or not wanted, and that would happen while they were slim. And then they would put on weight until they got to the point where they got less and less male attention. And at that point, the unconscious would go, oh, this is great, nobody bothers you anymore. So however much they tried to slim, the unconscious would go, now we need a bit of weight, need a bit of weight, need a bit of weight. You're not going to be safe, slim. And there was nothing they could do until they removed that program that said, get slim, bloke start pestering you again. Right? And it's just programs. We're all running programs. And sometimes we're aware of them and sometimes we're not. And some of the programs are stupid. They are so trivial, it's unbelievable. I deal with people who have had anxiety all their life, and I wipe it out in one session. Right? You come to my house for a day, you don't leave with it. Okay? Anxiety goes away. You still have the normal things. If you're going to give a speech in 3 days, you'd get a bit anxious, but that's about preparing. But this overall anxiety of something bad going to happen goes because it's just a program. So it can be done. You can remove these things. Okay, but you just have to get to the core of it. Now, for a lot of people, it's a terrible thing that's happened to them that's set the anxiety off. And I won't even mention what I deal with. But for some people, they've had this anxiety for 40 or 50 or even 63 years, I think is the longest one I've done. And it can be incredibly trivial, the first thing that happened. A lady the other day, I took her back in time, we got back to 12-year-old, and all that had happened is a friend was due to come around to her house and they're going to go to an event together, and a friend didn't turn up. That was it. That was the start of a lifetime of anxiety and lack of self-worth. Because she believed in her head a friend hadn't turned up because she wasn't a nice person. And it seemed a little bit adrift for me, so I took her back a couple of years and an auntie died or something. And I think she'd wanted to go in and talk to the auntie, but auntie had started getting nasty because she had cancer and was in pain. And then there was this sort of dual thing of wanted to see her, but didn't want to see her because she frightened her. And I think she'd just in her own head gone, well, I'm not a very nice person. And then when a friend didn't turn up, it was, well, she hasn't turned up because I'm not a very nice person. Because once you've set that process in place, everything you see reflects what you think the other person thinks. when we talked about it, I said, well, was this just the once? And she said, oh no, we were friends for years after that. And in fact, in the end, she told me she was jealous of me and my family and the relationship I had with my family because she didn't have that. So there's a woman who set a thing up on the basis that she's inferior to the girl that didn't turn up. And the girl that didn't turn up thinks she's absolutely superior to her. So isn't that crazy? I took somebody else back and it was a young guy. He was young when it happened. He was a very tall guy, solidly built. And he'd always been built quite big. And they did something at school, and they had to crawl between the two benches that you put on the floor for gym. And he got stuck, and everybody laughed. And that was the start of a whole life of being anxious. And when I took him back to that, and he saw what it was, I said, if you'd have been in the audience watching a fat kid going through that thing and got stuck, would you have laughed? And he went, yeah, certainly, well, he would. And then with that, he was like released from it. Because this wasn't kids laughing at him, they were laughing at the stupidity of the situation of a small child trying to get through a gap they can't get through. And it was funny. So it doesn't have to be something incredibly traumatic, but you have to be wanting to let go of it. And I've spoken to people very recently who've told me horrendous things, and for some unknown reason, well, I know the reason, when you talk to them, they don't want to let go. And it's still hurting them. And that's a bit like putting your hand on a red hot stove and then you go, oh, that hurts. Oh God, that rat really, oh, that's burning my hand there for the bone. And you stay there. Now, you would say, why would you do anything that keeps hurting you? I'm going to tell you the reason. Okay? If we do something that hurts and we recover very quickly, we then think, I've learnt nothing from that. Right? So if I put my hand on this stove and I go, oh damn, and I get it off in time, it's sort of like, oh, they get a bit hot, those stoves. But if it comes into a massive blister, I'm not going to go near stoves, am I? But if I then want to think, oh God, I'll forget about that stove. If this heals up now, I could go back to a stove again, couldn't I? Again. Oh shit, I've done it again. But if I peel the skin off every day and get it till it goes septic and it's nasty and horrible, then I'll go, it might be horrible this, but it's not as horrible as that. And I will never go near a stove again while I keep peeling the skin off every day. And that's what you're doing in your mind. When you revisit something that's over and done with in your head, you're going back and you're hurting yourself deliberately so that you don't get the pain of the thing that originally hurt you. You'll avoid it next time because you reminded yourself that that hurt a lot. And we keep doing that. And this is the biggest obstacle I have to get over. Because everybody who comes to see me, when I've done it, they go, well, I didn't believe that was possible. And I thought if this was true, there'd be a queue around the block. And I go, but yeah, but you didn't know. You came along not expecting it to work. And everybody I tell about it goes, well, it can't work like that. But it does. It is as simple as that. You're running a program that messes your life up, and yet you're still hanging on to it. And you can literally just let go of it. But you have to do it at an unconscious level. You have to say, you know, I've had enough of this now. Sometimes it's simple enough to say, I said to people, okay, we found what it is that was bothering you, and you were 6 years old, okay? Do you still want a six-year-old to run your life? And they go, no. And that's the start of the healing process. As soon as they go, no, I'm not having that anymore, it can start to go. And it does. And it can go instantly because it's a program. You erase a program, it's gone. But you have to do that at the unconscious level. You have to take it out of there. And because people don't know what to put back in, I say, well, love, joy and peace do. Okay. So, that voice in your head, it's not you. And if you go, if we believe it's us, then we think we have to take notice of it. But we don't, because it's not us. It's somebody else telling us a stupid thing in the past and we keep repeating it like it's true. It's not true. Or you can decide whether you want to continue running that program or go away. Okay. Now, following on from what I was talking about yesterday, which was about don't feed the monster, it's all about significance. What we give significance takes over our life. Okay? If there was a little animal on the table here, and we don't know what it is, okay, if we go, oh, Dad, what's that? What's that on there? Oh my God. It grows. It grows in size. Because we're now all going, that could hurt me, oh my God. And as soon as we do that, we make it bigger than what it actually is. Because it's only that big, so why would it hurt us? And then we turn it into this thing. And you've only got to do this with a spider. Somebody said, there's a spider in my house the other day. It was that big. No, it wasn't. Not unless you bought it from a pet shop and it eats birds. It's not that big. But we turn things into bigger than what they are. And our language makes things increase in size. My partner the other day, who should know better than to say things in front of me, said, my heel is killing me. And I went, oh my God. And I went to pick up the phone and I said, I'm going to get an ambulance. She went, what? I said, your heel is killing you. I said, let's get an ambulance. And she went, well, it's not killing me. I went, oh, what is it doing? She said, it's a little bit painful. And the thing is, if your heel's killing you, when you put your foot forward, if it doesn't kill you, you go, why is that not killing me? And it goes, oh, you want it to kill you, do you? And it gives you a real big pain. And literally, we can talk ourselves out of things. We just diminish them. Okay. But you see, when something happens or there's something we're worried about, giving it energy will always expand it. And that doesn't matter whether you give it energy going, go away, get out of my life, I don't want to think about you. I don't want to think about you. I give it energy. If you go, I'm going to ignore you. I'm going to ignore you. I'm ignoring you. That gives it energy, right? So when something comes into your life, if it's a proper message, it will come with your understanding of what you need to do. But if it's a message and you don't understand it, you just say, I don't know what you're here for. You might as well go. There's no point. They put you over here. And a great example of this is, because there's no difference between mind and body. If somebody says, oh, I've got this pain, and it's not, you know, it's physical, it's not in my mind. Well, no, it's both. You can only have things in body and mind. So a client I see on a regular basis, I keep telling her stuff, and she just won't absorb it until about 3 weeks later. And then I see a post on Facebook where she tells somebody else exactly what I told her 3 weeks before. But at the day she goes, no, that's not true. But 3 weeks later, she's telling everybody else it's true. So it takes a while for this to sort of process with her. And she came round and she'd got a double wart on the edge of her thumb there. And being a woman, and women like nice nails and things, she was particularly annoyed by this thing on her neck. So she came in, she said, do you do anything with warts? And I went, well, do you want to get rid of it? She said, of course I want to get rid of it. I've had it for 6 months and I've tried bloody cider vinegar and onion. And she reeled off dozens of things she tried and it hadn't gone. I said, okay, stop giving it significance. Just say to it, are you still here? I thought you'd gone. And then leave it. You don't have to do a mantra every day or whatever. And if you do happen to spot it again, just go, I thought you'd gone. And then put it away again. She came back a week later, shoves this thing in my face, and goes, it's gone, it's gone. And I went, I told you it would. She went, well, I didn't believe you. And I said, you always don't believe me. And it's, if it can do that, if it can move a bloody wart off your thumb in a week, right? The power of your thoughts is incredible. I had a mole on the back up here. I'll show you now, but it's just a slight mark there. And I put it next to a 25 pence piece. It was about that big. And it was sort of like, almost like two things that overlapped each other. And it started to be a problem. It started to catch on my shirts, it nearly fetched it up. It was like scabby and it was crusty and it bled. And my girlfriend went, my God, get to the doctors with that. That's you need to get it sorted. And it was a couple of weeks before we went away somewhere, and I didn't have time during that time to go to the doctors. And then she spotted it again and went ballistic and said, get rid of it. And I said, well, if you can't before we go away. And so I did this thing where I went, you know, already gone. It's gone now. Don't need it anymore. Did it twice in the shower. Just said, you're gone. I just don't want it anymore. And we went away for about 10 days. Came back, Trudy moved in the next day. Sees me in the shower and goes, what the hell? I went, what? She said, it's nearly gone, that mop. I went, oh, I told it to go the other day. She went, but it has it. She took a photo of half this mole missing. And the following day, the other half dropped off. Never grown again. It's the power of our mind is just incredible because it runs everything in your body. It's running your heart and your lungs at the moment. Your posture, it's running everything. Even the thoughts you're now processing are part of all the thoughts you've ever had in your life. It's looking for the appropriate ones to run your thoughts. You're not consciously picking things in your head now, are you? Your unconscious is running that. It runs everything. And yet the bit we think we're clever with is this conscious bit that holds 8 bits of data and I could have filled up by you holding on to my phone number. Anybody remember my phone number? You don't. Okay, so I'll sum it up quite quickly. Just remember that when you have a voice in your head, it's not your voice. If you want to take notice of what it says and have a shitty life, that's up to you. Okay? Because it's not the one that gives you a good life. It's the one that comes along and annoys you. So you can go, not listening. But don't fight it. Don't try and run away from it. Don't try and get angry with it. Because whatever you do, it will keep coming back. If you just go, I get your message, but I don't know what the hell you're trying to tell me. Okay, I understand you're giving me a message. If you want to come back and give me a proper message, I understand, that's fine. But until then, you can go away. Okay? And it will. And if it's a proper message, if it's got some value in it, it's about a bit like me coming to your house to give you an envelope or something, and I knock on the door, and I can see you're in the kitchen, and you don't answer the door. I'm going to knock louder. I'm going to kick the door and I'm going to go, I've got this bloody parcel to give you, you know. I'm not going because I can see you're in. I'll hang on the glass on the window. And if you still ignore me, I'm going to go, what am I going to do now? So if you've got a message from your unconscious and it's worth having, it will give you it in a format that you appreciate, that you understand. So even pain can be a message. So if you fell off a horse 20 years ago and you still hurt, there's no need for that pain. If the doctor says, well, we can't even find what's wrong, but you're still in pain, you don't need that message. Why would you? But you see, our brain will do wonderful things. You fall off a horse 20 years ago, and as you lay on the floor winded and think you can't breathe, you go, I'm going to die. That bloody horse, I'm going to die. Right? And next time you go to go on a horse, it'll give you so much pain from 20 years ago that you go, I can't get on a horse anymore. It's done its job. It stopped you from dying. But if you go, I understand you're trying to stop me getting on horses. I don't actually like horses anymore. It can go, oh, right, it sucks the pain off. And it literally will do that. Okay, so anyone who's seen me afterwards can see me. Fill one of these in and you'll get a copy or sent the link for the classroom. And if you want to chat about any of your personal things, you can see me on the stand. I've been Stephen Blake, you've been a lovely audience. Thank you.